Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Hey.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi.
So we have a few emails. We love when we get emails. We love it when people write our show for us by asking us questions. It makes our lives easier. So we're going to start off with, this is from David. And David writes, a question to be considered for the show. When is it time to start thinking about copywriting the name of an existing business and or brand side hustle? It isn't normally something I'd be concerned about rushing into, but is inaction on this front ever a risk? E.g., if Target released some modern rogue line of products and then came after Brian, does this sort of thing ever happen? Are there no brander steps to take to defend yourself against would-be Johnny-come-lately trolls?
Yeah, I have thoughts on this. So in general, the perception people have is that you should trademark a thing before you launch a thing. And there are, if you are an established big money business, you can do that. But in general, as an author, tell me if I'm landing this right, Andrew, the moment you write a thing, you have the copyright to it. Now, the only thing like...
I think it's usually based on publishing, like... it is on creation.
Yeah, correct.
But you would prove it by publishing.
Right. Okay. But what you want to do is create a chain of evidence that secures, if there's ever a dispute, you want the stronger chain of evidence that shows that you're the one that created this.
Yeah, and just let me interrupt for a moment too, is to clarify, and this is pointed out in the chat, very helpful. Trademark is different than copyright. And so if you're asking, if the guy is asking about trademark, that's one thing. And I don't know enough about that. And so I sort of don't talk a lot about trademark stuff because that's a very different area.
Right. So in my only experiences, and then this way we'll keep everything, number one, I'm not a lawyer. Number two, I'm only going to talk about my experiences. But in my experiences, you go forward and start doing a thing and you do your best to make sure that you are building a niche in unoccupied territory. You may, down the road, find out that somebody else perceives that they have a claim to that territory, in which case you don't immediately go to a lawsuit. For example, we came out with the Rogues wallet. We came up with a magic wallet that was in the Rogues line with the glyphs on it and everything, scam stuff, and we call it the Rogues wallet. Everything was fine for a year and a half. Then we got an email. It wasn't even like a big hairy cease and desist, or maybe it was. I don't know if it was a cease and desist, but whatever it was basically there happens to be a company called Rogue that does produce wallets. In general, their brand is RFID scrambling or protecting stuff so that nobody can hack your credit cards and your wallets or whatever. And they had a wallet product. And again, this only becomes a problem when you start to show up in their Google search results, right? For example, separate example. Basically, the way that ended is they were like, hey, man, we got a problem. We have something called the Rogue Wallet, and you have the Rogue's Wallet. We would like you to stop doing your thing. And so the temptation is to just, you know, immediately crumble. In some cases, maybe that's the case. But in general, people tend to negotiate in good faith. And where we got to is like, okay, well, we both agree that nobody wants to confuse your product for our product. What if we made it more clear what we're doing? We'll call it the Rogue's Ultimate Magic Wallet, and we'll make sure that it only appears under that name and with those descriptors, so that way it's very unlikely that somebody who intends to protect their RFID devices will accidentally buy a 8 times more expensive magic wallet with pockets and stuff in it. And even then, what they don't say is, that sounds great. What they say is, well, if that were to happen, we would see no reason to continue action against you. And so then you keep on going. Yeah. Likewise, the trademarking or the copywriting of all this stuff, all you're doing is you're setting up a chain of evidence for some future argument that may never happen. And it only matters when, number one, you're successful enough that you're an attractive target for the discussion. And number two, even then, if you have enough evidence, you don't even need the other thing. For example, it's funny that he brought up Modern Rogue, because there was a Gillette had an ad that said a classically styled, modernly rogue or whatever. It was a very curious use of phrase. Now, I have no ownership of that phrase outside of that's been the name of the brand and the name of the show and all that stuff. Gillette is in a position to, if they wanted to, they could send all the lawyers and they could say, well, we trademarked everything, so you got to get bent. But they would know that they would have, all I wanted to do is make it clear, it's like, well, that will be unpleasant for you if you do that. It will possibly be more trouble than it's worth. And so yeah, I wrote a snarky tweet and it got retweeted like hundreds of times or whatever. So in that case, I'm going to say that in general, nobody fights over pies that don't exist. They do fight when there's a pie to be split. So I would say the moment you perceive that somebody's coming for your territory, then I don't really have a hard and fast answer to that, but I do know, like, even my name and website, schwood.com, that was all registered. I mean, that was the name I self-applied in high school for Brian Brushwood, just Schwood, and then I registered schwood.com, and then later some glasses named Schwood wooden sunglasses came along. And there's been a couple of times that people who have worked at that company, I don't think they were speaking on behalf of the company, I think they were just speaking off the cuff, have said, well, why do you even have that domain? Seems like it should go to a real business like us. And so then what I've done is just loudly screen capped and shared so that there's a strong chain of evidence, so that if down the road there's ever a dispute, I'm able to say, like, hey man, it has been known and in the public record that this has been what I've been saying for this amount of time.
And when it comes to websites, you can't invalidate someone's website registration just because they have the same name or even have your name. You there tends to need to be some actual, like, bad faith in sort of like what the website is. And
squat on it, right?
Yeah. Well, and not just squatting, but like if it, like, oh, this happens a lot with political stuff of like, if you got mittromney.edu and you redirected it to, say, Newt Gingrich's campaign, this is how tight an
MS2 is. How relevant this hot political goss is.
Then that would be a grounds to maybe appeal to ICANN and say, hey, actually, this is improper use of this registration. But it's your like in Brian's example, that's his personal website versus this business. There's not any sort of bad behavior there. So that's why they're probably very softly trying to get that to you, because they wouldn't they don't have any actual legal right.
To answer the question of when do you get, like, because I remember scam stuff was one of those things where because it was independent from the scam school property, it occurred to me, like, oof, you know, I think everything's going to be fine, but I just want to make sure that I'm covered. So I did file for a USPTO, US Patent and Trade Organization, I think is what it is,
office,
for the word scam stuff in the context of, and you have to pick a very narrow context of a retail store using the name scam stuff. And it was granted. What did it really get me? It got me, again, that was to protect myself for a fight that never manifested, because I think
we got Contender and Action News as a card game trademarked because we didn't want other game, and we knew that there was already other people at play for that phrase, the Contender. There's movies and books and stuff like that. Nobody had a card game, a trademark for it, and so we felt that it was prudent to have it, again, to demonstrate the fact that we had put something like that out, and that if there was, let's say, a boxing-themed card game for the boxing reality show, The Contender, that came out, that would actively kind of erode where we are. So it would need to be, like, based on the TV show, so it's not just The Contender.
So a thing I recommend anybody, if you're looking and getting a name, even if it's a domain name you want, do a USPTO trademark search. So go to USPTO.gov and you can search to see if that name has been used by somebody presently. If they are, and it's a live, meaning they've done the process, it's a live trademark, I would not use it. I would stay away from there. And that's save yourself a lot of trouble there, because if you use a trademark that's being used by somebody else and you're in a related industry, problematic. I'm not going to say the name of the trademark he's interested in, because I think it's a good one. And I did a search and I could not find it there, but he mentions that somebody is in an adjacent but very close field is using it, not for his application. And I would suggest, if you're serious about this business, then follow Brian and Justin's suit and go ahead and apply a trademark for what you want to do, because it's a good name. And if somebody else comes along and starts a related business using that name, you're going to deal with brand confusion. And if you don't have a trademark, you'd have no grounds to probably ask them, you know, you can ask them to, oh, use something different, but having that trademark is super helpful. So I filed for a couple in my life and never had to use them, but.
Yeah. So basically think of it as just another tool in the belt. If the best tool is to have a dominant position and universally be perceived as the authority. If some company came out with Brian Brushwood branded sunglasses, they would have a really hard time justifying invading that market, as I would have a very strong case of why I'm the king of Brian Brushwood as a phrase. And among those, that case would be even stronger if I also had a piece of paper from the government.
Yeah, because like I could see a situation where I think his name's David, builds his business, uses this name, and then somebody else does something adjacent and gets a trademark for that. Then he and David doesn't have it, and then David gets a letter from a lawyer saying we own the trademark to this. You're going to have to either give it up or you're going to have to put up a legal defense, and that's when it gets really expensive.
Well, and then also there's also the court of public opinion, and that's what I was doing when I was fussing at Gillette and was basically just saying, hey man, I have no legal protection of those words. You absolutely can do that, but also I'm making it very clear that I will make it unpleasant for you if you decide to use those words. And also they've never used those words again.
Let's go on now to Mr. James Harrison.
Never heard of him. Name one time he's written entire episodes of After Things for us.
Yep. James writes, so I have two videos with Modern Rogue. One hit 1.3 million viewers and the other hit 39 on YouTube trending. I believe that's good. People are following me on social media. I'm getting people stopping me to ask if I'm that pickpocket guy from the Rogue channel on YouTube. I just got back from performing overseas in Sweden. The traffic on my website exceeded its bandwidth, so it shut down Cloudflare. My web designer thought I'd been hacked. Brian has said on numerous occasions when someone hands you a gold brick, you say thank you and act like you were expecting it, which I did. But how exactly does one spend a gold brick? Now that I have this video, the experience performing internationally, and a larger social media presence, how does one make money off of this? Asking for a friend, James Harrison.
I mean, this sounds like a customer service complaint. I don't know that we need to air all this on this show. No, obviously it's wonderful. James Harrison taught us how to steal watches and wallets on Modern Rogue. And he's been a longtime fan and friend of the show. But tell me if this reads as true to both of you gentlemen. The one thing I know for sure is inefficiently will be how you spend a gold brick. Like the amount of goodwill and attention that's come in, I think step one is prepare yourself mentally for the fact that whatever you take away from it to go into your next project and continue to build things will not be as efficient as you would like.
Yeah. I think, look, the internet operates in, a kind of breathe in, breathe out way for digital entrepreneurs. And right now you've successfully taken in oxygen. So now the question is exactly how you take advantage of it and then expel it. It will go away, right? There's going to be a point where the amount of people that are there that followed you because of this one thing, if you continue to produce stuff that they followed you for, they will continue to follow. If you do more Modern Rogue videos, then you will have the shot to speak to that exact same audience. But on one hand, the question is, now that you've seen what that influx is, for the audience that is remaining around you, what do you have to give them that they want? And among that, is there anything that you believe they would be happy to part money with to have? And then past that, what is the next way that you can breathe in? Like the next way that you can find an audience, and you know, how would you take advantage of it then, now that you've kind of gone through it?
That's actually a really good way to think about this, is like, what are the tangible unlocks that have happened? Number one, you've now had two auditions to, let's say, 500,000 people who have seen both videos. So when you appear next in front of them, you will not be a brand new person that is being auditioned. You will be that guy that I remember from those two other videos that I liked. That is an increased place of stature. Second of all, you now have a proven track record with the Modern Rogue organization, which means if you call me up and say, I have three new ideas for three different episodes, when can I come down? Whereas before, it was kind of a question mark, speculative play of like, yeah, come on down, stay, we'll figure it out. And it turns out that it had such a happy ending that now you are a proven commodity. And so now essentially my platform in the Modern Rogue becomes your platform, as long as you have something to tell. So what you want to do is create a landing place to seduce a bunch of my audience to follow your story and say, hey, if you want the whole Pickpockets course, that's all at whatever, like, have a thing to promote. It's great to go on and do an appearance for the experience and all that stuff, but it doesn't really start making you money until you have your platform that you can seduce the Modern Rogue audiences to join.
The simplest, the five things you'd need to know about pickpocketing, the ebook that you write between now and the next time that you come on the Modern Rogue. And as you do that, you'll always have a place to either push to your own content if you are doing your own content on the internet, but all of that continues to breathe in, right? On the breathe out, you need, like, what nutrients are you taking? Because otherwise, everyone will just show up and it'll be feel really, really good that everybody showed up, and then they will slowly dissipate. And what will have come from it? Maybe somebody who books things internationally, but that's going to happen whether or not you're selling people a $3 to $10 ebook.
Yeah, I think absolutely product, like they said. I think do a video, a DVD you could sell, an ebook. I think those are things you want to do now, because I'm looking at your Twitter page like that, you know, and I know some performers say, hey, I don't want to sell. If you don't want to sell, that's a different thing. That's fine. But if you want to, if you're open to a product, highly, 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 highly recommend it. I'm out here in LA and I can literally walk 500 feet and I will run into a YouTuber with 100 million views. I will run into people with tons of views and no money. Because in this day and age, views and followers are not gold bricks. You know, they are the starting point. And then you have to figure, they're the headshots and resumes. You know, the next step is having a product that people want, and you've seemed to have knocked it out of the park there. So make product, and that's where you start to make money.
Yeah, that's the, I think we've talked about it briefly, but draw a circle. Story, attention, sales. You build the story to attract attention. You build and curate the attention. Think of it as a crop. And then you harvest that attention either in the form of action. Please vote for me for this thing. Please subscribe to my newsletter. Or please buy my book. Or you rent out some of that space to the Dollar Shave Club guy or whatever. But the important part, the part that nobody gets, is you take that money and you reinvest in bigger, better stories. So as soon as you have a harvest, you create a sustainable yield so it keeps on going.
Yeah, and I would say, like, if you want a product you could sell right now by the end of the podcast, is you could put a thing in your bio, say, hey, I do one-on-one Skype training. I will teach you a couple effects live on Skype, 1 hour, you know, 45-minute session, you know, two 45-minute sessions, one to practice, learn it, then a follow-up, whatever. You could charge a high price for that. You could see how something like that floats, because it's just saying I'll do a thing and setting up a PayPal account. And I think there are people, because you have got a really good skill, you might have an audience that wants to do that.
So. Yep. And also, it's really funny for James's appearance in particular, there was so many of the comments that said, oh, when they said it was going to be a pickpocket, I just knew it was going to be Apollo Robbins. And look, we all love Apollo. He's great. There's a reason he's the gentleman thief. But as a branding person, I'm like, why would you think that? Because that's just the only one you've seen before. And then all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, that means there's an opportunity to be Pepsi to Apollo Robbins's Coke. So figure out what Apollo, not that you have to be an ungentlemanly thief or whatever, but Apollo Robbins is playing the high-end boutique. I'm on TED conferences and all that stuff. Then what you can do is play the more approachable, be the Kia Soul of pickpockets, where it's like, hey man, I'm approachable and I can one-on-one teach you all of this stuff in a way that Apollo can't do it. Sorry if that, any of that, I don't know what any of these brands.
I nicked your wallet. Yes, I'm for a point.
Not the ungentleman. I'm the mugger. Give me your wallet.
Is that pickpocketing still at that point?
What I'm saying is look at the brand space, and if you perceive it as an occupied niche, figure out what aspect of the niche is not occupied, and then move to that.
Well, yeah. And look, here's the niche: YouTube. YouTube. I mean, like, the medium is the message. Where does Apollo Robbins show up? I mean, yeah, there's the TED Talks, but there's always reproductions of him on television, either currently or in the past, that people find on this channel. In terms of people who are speaking directly to a YouTube audience, you could be that guy. But then again, I think for right now, forget about whether or not you're going to make your own content, because that's a whole nother question. Right now, you got a bunch of people. So I would say Andrew's idea, look, high price. What is 2 hours of your time worth? Set up 8 slots, set a price for it, see if they sell. If they don't all sell, then you can think about lowering the price. If they do, then think about raising the price, or think about cutting down how many slots you have. Beyond that, I think everybody certainly Brian and Andrew are acolytes of block out a weekend, write a thing. It's never been easier to write and publish a thing. Go to Upwork, get a really nice, spend an extra, $100-$200 on an illustrator to do a really awesome cover for you, and boom, congratulations. Within 72 hours, you can take advantage of the fact that people who are watching your stuff on YouTube that then go to follow you on Twitter, so strain that audience appropriately, then strain it one more time on people that really want to spend an extra $5 to learn more, that you have that for them. Because right now you've strained it one to your social media. Now, where do you go from there?
Yeah. And it's, we can all talk about the fact that getting a lot of views is not, does not equal cash. Does not equal cash. You've got to figure out how you use that. So
that's again, the word is harvest. Harvest. Like having a bunch of views is the equivalent of congratulations. You have a bumper crop. All of a sudden, your corn is, self-germinated, and you've got acres and acres and acres of stuff. The only thing you're going to keep is whatever you harvest from it.
Yep. Cool. Want to do picks?
Yeah, I meant to get to this. Simon Sinek wrote a book, Start With Why. Did you ever read it?
I think I watched the TED Talk.
Okay. I liked it a lot. And he's got a new book called The Infinite Game. And he differentiates infinite games from finite games. Finite games is take football, right? You have a set of rules, and every finite game has a beginning, a middle, and an end. An infinite game is different. So football is a finite game. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and all that matters at the end, there's a winner and a loser, and the score is what matters. An infinite game is the American experiment. They call a target that will never, ever be fully achieved. There will never be a moment that we point and say, well, we did it. Here's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's all over. But it's the infinite game that draws people on an ongoing basis to participate and give of themselves. And he speaks about it in terms of from a corporate perspective. Microsoft, he says, was very interested in finite games. All of their talks were about beating Apple this quarter. Beginning here, ending there. Numbers higher, numbers lower. We won, we lost. Apple never mentions Microsoft because they are playing an infinite game. Their infinite game is empowering creative individuals, and they will never win that game. But it is a more worthy game. Finite games, there is two players begin it, then they end it. The game ends, and the players move on with their lives. Infinite games are the reverse. The game never ends. The players they participate, and then they peace out. The purpose of an infinite game is to play it for as long as you can. So if, for example, you know, here we wrote a mission statement saying, or I wrote a mission statement saying, you know, our goal is to empower people worldwide to be the most interesting person in the room, whether it's for one moment doing a cool magic trick or having a cool factoid from an article or having a rogue's ring to show off to your friend. For just one moment, we want to empower everyone in the world to have that blissful joy of being the most interesting person in the room. That is an infinite game, because we will never be able to get it to everyone, but all of us will derive immense joy as we come up with new and innovative ways to figure out how to deliver that. And it's a great kind of paradigm shifter book for me. I'm really, really enjoying it. But audiobook is read by Simon Sinek. It's The Infinite Game.
Very cool. Check that out. You know, to that point, like, and you talk about like Microsoft school, like Microsoft's stated goal from the 80s was, Bill Gates said, a PC on every desktop running Windows. And then they got that. And then internet happened, and then phones happened, and then all these other things happened. And
he specifically makes a bit of an indictment on the Ballmer generation, because that rhetoric originally, you did have, Bill Gates was playing an infinite game, right? He was seeking to empower people. Whereas Ballmer, and this is usually what happens with second generation CEOs, is the founder's vision is an infinite game, and then somebody comes in and they give the example of Walmart. They say that the original thing, you know, the goal of Walmart was the infinite game of, can we raise the standard of living of the entire planet by allowing them to get more stuff at more affordable prices? What logistics things can we transform? That was all Sam Walton's vision. But then once Sam Walton was out, the new guy mentioned three things. Talked about quarterly growth, defeating competitors, and the third thing he mentioned was, and continue to offer cheap stuff. And you saw it, and it was a real problem. And so anyway, I really like that paradigm.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that breaks down why Amazon's success, when you look at what Bezos was really after, and Google organizing the world's information for marketing. Yeah, it's cool. I like that outlook. You know,
he does. You know, I did have to grin and bear it while he bags on Milton Friedman, and he spends like an entire chapter bagging on Milton Friedman's efforts to recouch every business's job is just to serve their shareholders. But outside of that, I've enjoyed everything else.
Yeah, it's a weird, I mean, I don't see why that is. I'd have to read the book to understand why that's contradictory to, you know, well, I mean.
Because he points out that people who are shareholders, he questions the premise that shareholders are owners, because they don't act like owners, they act like renters. Think about the way you drive a rented car, knowing that you're not going to have it for very long. And he says that's the way people in today's market, because of the incentives that we've set up, people buy a stock, they talk about waiting for the quarterly results, they won, they cash out, and they move on. Those are not the actions of somebody who is an owner of a part owner of a business who's in it for the long haul. Which I think is a fine framework.
Yeah, but it gets into, you know, the investor intention, because you have long-term investors who say, you know, absolutely, I like this long-term mission statement. But yeah, it's a interesting sidejack, I guess. Justin?
All right. I'll do it.
We can
finally talk about the big news coming out of HBO this weekend. Misbehavin' is now on Spotify. Listen to Misbehavin' from the Righteous Gemstones in glorious studio audio quality on Spotify. You're welcome.
That's awesome.
Bryce?
I got a pick. I also have I have a second video game pick today. There's a new mech game out. You control a big robot and you try to save the world from artificial intelligence. The very little bit of story that they tell you in this game is that something happens and then all the AI in the world decide that humanity has to be obliterated. So there's this entire like war economy set up of mercenaries and merc groups who get hired by the corporations that own the territory of this land to fight artificial intelligence machines and other big mechs. It's called Daemon X Machina. It's on the Nintendo Switch. It's really cool. I kind of grew up playing the Armored Core games, if you remember that series. One of the original producers from Armored Core is works on this game, and you tend to see a lot of that in how the systems and the menus are set up, how it tells stories, you know, in a lot of text and emails. It's really interesting. It has online multiplayer, which I'm not really interested in trying, but it seems really cool. And the last time I played an Armored Core game, you didn't have joysticks, so you had to use the shoulder buttons to rotate up and down. So that three generation jump of controllers makes it feel really fun and easy.
It looks gorgeous. It's like, and as a kid, if I wanted to play Robotech the game, like this is like, mm-hmm. It looks amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a vaguely kind of cel-shaded look. Right. It reminds me a lot of, I think Robotech is a good anchor for the visual style in that.
And there's a lot of customization. You can customize the paint and the colors of your robot, so each different part can have different color schemes. Your character can be customized. You get buffs by going to the ice cream shop next to your garage, and you buy scoops of different flavors, and the flavors are different buffs, and they even have a stamp card, so when you get 10 scoops, you get a free one. it's a neat little game. It's kind of a lot when you first play it. You kind of need to focus in, and because it dumps everything in all at once. But I think it's really neat. Daemon X Machina.
Cool. My pick. I guess I'll make this my pick. We talked about an email. Somebody mentioned that, hey, their website went down. Hey, it's 2019. Doesn't need to happen. Cloudflare, there are other solutions like that. Basically, what this is if you have a website that you host it somewhere, you point your DNS to Cloudflare. And if you're under attack or you get a lot of traffic, Cloudflare is able to spread that traffic across their global network of centers.
Does that render you like completely DDoS proof?
I mean, it basically, if you all of a sudden they monitor to see if you're under attack, and then if you think you're being attacked, you can go there in the panel and say I'm under attack. And so basically, this is what you use to mitigate those threats. And I've gone to some websites that are political in nature, and sometimes a Cloudflare screen pops up and says we're redirecting you because they're under attack. So it's good for that. Also, what you can do is you can set up like image caching. So every time you pull an image from Google Cloud or Amazon S3, there is a fractional cost. It is a tiny, tiny, tiny fractional cost is why you don't really care. But if you get a lot of traffic or whatever, you can actually use like Cloudflare to distribute your image handling, et cetera. So these are like, you know, how does a Netflix video start playing automatically? You ever think about this? You know, you think about like, man, I just clicked on that video and I'm watching an HD stream play instantly. It's because that video is being hosted in hundreds of centers around the world, you know? And so Cloudflare can help you with your website doing that. And they have a free tier. So that's my recommendation.
Awesome. Cool.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.